Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 113. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd. Dave, Week 2 of OTAs wrapped up yesterday. What's the latest going on there?
You know, I guess the newness of them being back has kind of worn off to some in the media because the reports were not as fast as furious.
I think we got a report on every snap of the ball and 20 pictures last Tuesday, and we got nothing yesterday.
Yeah, there hasn't been too terribly much to pass along. We do know that a few players kind of that got some time off at certain times this week were James Harrison, Willie Colon, Steve McClendon. Roethlisberger did not work on Thursday for the second week in a row. Jason Worlds, of course, is still out with that hand/thumb, I think. And Steven Sylvester also evidently got a little time off as well. An interesting thing, I think Jim Wexel reported that James Harrison, although his back seems to be better, he missed a lot of time this week, evidently with some sort of a knee trouble that was described to Jim Wexel as minor. Jason Worlds was out, so that meant Chris Carter was the one filling in on that right side for Harrison there. Wexel notes that Carter looked good. He's the most obvious fit, but he was told that he's not the brightest bulb basically in the chandelier right now. A few other notes. Wesley Saunders, evidently, according to Wexel, is kind of a pain in the ass in the trainer's room. Seems to always be in there, complaining about this, that, and the other. I think Wexel reported that he was not on the field Thursday either there. A few other notes. Marcus Gilbert started the week, I believe, getting some work at left tackle and ended the week working at right tackle. So that's kind of to be expected with the uncertainty that we have at both of the tackle positions right now. So one other note I think that Wexel points out is that Tyler Beeler, the undrafted kid, is probably the only guy that looks to probably challenge Tony Clemens, the Steelers' seventh-round draft pick, for that fifth wide receiver spot on the roster. It's also been noted this past week that Curtis Brown had a great week of running around in shorts, as did Cortez Allen as well. So that's definitely exciting news to hear, although I hate to keep disclaiming that it is football in shorts. But Cortez Allen, I know you probably listened to that interview with Joe Bindle yesterday on 970 ESPN. Boy, what a kid that kid is. Looks like he gets it.
Yeah, I agree. Good to hear him. I'm big on both those. We're both big on both those guys. Think they're definitely going to be contributors this year. And with Keenan Lewis penciling himself in for the Pro Bowl, the Steelers are going to have quite a group of cornerbacks, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's going to be situations I feel this year where you're going to be in a dime situation perhaps, and you might actually see all four cornerbacks. It's not going to happen a lot this year in dime. I think you'll see more big nickel than you will dime this year. But with these new age tight ends and trying to match up speed on speed and all like that, I think there will be a few times where you'll see all four of those corners on the field. But for the most part, I think the big battle here is, can Keenan Lewis hold on to that job outside all of training camp? If he doesn't, Cortez Allen, I think, would be the prime guy that he has to fight off there. And then Curtis Brown inside. This is a guy that Dejan Kovacevic mentioned the other day, that this guy really plays well in the slot. And it's good to have these battles. It's good to have three dogs in one bone, because competition is never a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We've heard it. We'll get into the little Batch and Rainey competition. Again, I've got my kind of my 20 cents in on Curtis Brown winning this job, but it wouldn't surprise me if any one of the three wins the job. And we've talked a lot about how we think Cortez Allen will most likely be the guy in the slot in the nickel situations, but we'll see how that all plays out when we get a little closer. It was interesting to hear Mark Caballi tweet that, having watched now, you know, 6 days of OTAs, he has no idea what the Steelers are doing with their offensive line combinations. And look, that's to be unexpected. I mean, you've got two guys who are hypothetically penciled in as your starters, not in attendance. So, you know, Pouncey's going to be your starting center, and you know Willie Colon's going to be your starting left guard. But the reality of the situation is two of the other guys aren't there, and you need to have position flexibility. And if it turns out Mike Adams can't do the job at left tackle, Marcus Gilbert may be the guy there. If it turns out somebody goes down, they've got to have, you know, plan for every contingency. And as we've talked about so many times, the Steelers like to dress seven rather than eight offensive linemen on game days. So you need, you know, having these guys go through and take reps at different spots is not that big a deal. I don't think it sends any kind of message that the thought that maybe, you know, Adams isn't going to be running at left tackle or whatever, Gilbert or whatever he's going to do. I think it is what we've talked about so many times. They've set up what they've set the situation up for the long term. Mike Adams is going to be a left tackle. Willie Collins will be a left guard. David DeCastro is going to be a right guard. And Marcus Gilbert's going to be a right tackle. That's the way it's going to be. It doesn't mean on opening day in Denver that that's what the lineup's going to be, but that's how it's going to be. And if two of those guys aren't there, then obviously they're going to run a lot of different schemes, a lot of different formations with different guys in different spots.
And you know what? They had an interview with Marcus Gilbert play on Steelers Live this week, live at 4. And this is a guy that's passionate. This guy really wants the left tackle job. You know, he played that at Florida. I think he wants to be that guy on the left side there. And he noted that it was in the plans for him, you know, of course, in preseason last year. That's where he got most of his work, was at left tackle. And I think that's what he considers his most natural position. So, you know, and you hit it on the head. I mean, Adams has missed two OTAs. Now, there is talk that he might be able to be available next week for the OTA session, according to Ed Bouchette. We'll have to see how that plays out. But there, it looks good that all three of those rookies, DeCastro, Adams, Alameda, Ta'amu, might be in, according to Bouchette, depending on, I guess, when their finals take place and all like that, for the June mandatory minicamp. So they'll learn a lot there. It'll be great to get them at least in for that, because that's the last session before training camp opens. But I think it's going to sort itself out real quick at the beginning of training camp. By the end of the first preseason game, it would not surprise me to see Mike Adams actually get to start at left tackle in the first preseason game, just to see how he handles the situation there. One interesting note, jumping backwards to these cornerback situation, David, Alan Gifford, who does a lot of contributing for Steelers Depot, I talked to him here and there off, you know, during the week. Keenan Lewis, you got to remember, this guy is back signed as a restricted free agent for 1 year. He's going to be unrestricted after the year. And, you know, if he has a Pro Bowl type season, great. But then, you know, basically I think what I'm trying to say is I really think they want Cortez Allen or Curtis Brown to rip this spot away from him on the outside through training camp. I really firmly believe that. Because of the sheer fact that, let's face it, Allen and Brown are the future. If Keenan Lewis has a Pro Bowl-type season, you're not going to slap the franchise tag on him. I mean, let's be honest. This is a guy that's going to be allowed to explore free agency likely one way or the other. So I think deep down inside, if you were able to get into some of these private conversations that the coaches have, I think they want Cortez Allen or Curtis Brown to win that job opposite Ike Taylor.
I don't disagree with you, and I think the answer is because they're the two better football players with higher ceilings. I mean, look, the reality is Keenan Lewis is going into his fourth season, and he had to bust his butt and take a big step forward to make the roster this past year. Now, good on him for doing it, but, you know, we saw what Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown did on special teams. We saw Cortez Allen on the field. No doubt, I think if Curtis Brown had stayed healthy through the end of the regular season, he probably would have gotten a little time on the field as well. So in terms of their development, their integration into the system, I mean, remember, the guys the Steelers had playing when Keenan Lewis was a rookie out of Washington State or what?
Oregon State.
You know, the guys we had, you know, weren't exactly setting the world on fire. It was McFadden. It was I'm drawing a blank. Joe Burnett. You had the guy who finished his career. Am I thinking Dwayne Washington? Is that what I'm thinking?
You're talking about I'm drawing.
Went to Indianapolis for a year for his last year. He's coaching for the Colts.
You're talking about the one that's Deshae Townsend.
Deshae Townsend from Alabama, right? So
he's with the Cardinals. He's their cornerback's secondary coach now.
Right. So the point being that Keenan Lewis wasn't exactly going up against Charles Woodson and Deion Sanders to win that job or to get playing time in his first 2 years, and he couldn't do it. So. You know, the reality is these guys are third and fourth round picks. I think the Steelers, we heard it a bunch of times. They love the coaching staff loved what they saw last year. They liked what they've seen these first 2 weeks. So, yeah, I don't think it's a question of them really, you know, wanting them to win the jobs as so much as they're the better football players. They got the higher ceilings and they're probably going to win the job. And it'd be interesting to see what happens with Keenan Lewis, how he's used. I mean, I wonder even if there's a time where, you know, the guy could eventually be a safety as a bigger guy, whether there's some opportunity there. And that, which segues right into the conversation, Dave. You talked about mini camp battles and training camp battles and position versatility. And there was somebody wrote this past week about the question of Ryan Clark in pass coverage and who is actually better in pass coverage, Mundy or Clark, and is there even the remotest possibility? We know Clark won't be playing an opening day in Denver, but is there even the remote possibility that Ryan Mundy could challenge Clark for that starting safety job?
No, absolutely zero. I just don't see it. Although I've learned not to talk in absolutes over the years, I guess I shouldn't say absolutely zero, but I just don't see it. Mundy is what he is. He's a number. He's the next guy off the bench. He's perfect to come in when they go into the big nickel and he takes the deep, strong safety spot. And then Polamalu comes down into the box there. Let's remember, too, that really even though we give Polamalu and Ryan Clark designations as strong safeties and free safeties, that spot, those safety spots, we've learned that really the two are really interchangeable over the years. As far as what they do. In fact, you know, Ryan Clark, you know, 100-something tackles last year, you know, so coming up and helping against the run and that type thing. I don't see Ryan Clark being challenged by Mundy at all. I think, it was either this past week or the week before where there was Ryan Clark and Mike Tomlin were trading some little fun jabs about something about you better draft. I forget what position he said. You better draft. I think he said tight end or something like that. I forget what he said. But Mike Tomlin shot back and says, I'm going to draft a safety next year, first round, a free safety.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I know that's all in fun and jest and all like that. But I do not see Mundy challenging Ryan Clark for that job. I think Ryan Clark's a leader. A leader on that defense. I think, you know, he has been caught out of position in the past before, especially come to note the game against the Ravens there. We have seen this, you know, a few times with him, but hey, you know, this is a willing and able tackler to come up in the running game is all. He knows the Dick LeBeau defense in and out. They didn't pay him what they paid him a few off seasons ago, to ride the pine, so to speak. So I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't think it obviously didn't pay him to ride the pine. I do think that, you know, the safety position, as I've said kind of over the past 2 years, is not as strong, I think, as people might think it is. I think, you know, clearly Polamalu is a fantastic player who does great things. But against the pass, those two guys are not they're not your ideal safeties against the pass. Now, look, that's obviously not their role all the time in Dick LeBeau's defense, and he has tailored his defense to fit their talents and vice versa. But, you know, they're not the best at pass coverage, and that's why upgrading the corner position certainly can make this defense even better. And statistically, it's ranked, you know, number one, you know, in the top five, obviously, for a number of years. They had a step back against the run last year, but a step up against the pass. You wonder how correlated those two things are. We'll see how the defensive line, the two ends can do, if they can do a better job in general this year against the run, closing things down. But, upgrading that corner position will certainly help in the safety play. And we've talked about schematically some of the different things they'd like to do. Dave, which brings us to the offensive side of the ball, and it is going to be just the topic of conversation in general until we get to the start of the regular season, the whole Ben and the Todd Haley offense. I know you've got a lot of thoughts on it. We keep hearing more about it. Ben continues to kind of, basically a passive-aggressive complaints about learning a new system. It just doesn't seem to go away. It should be something that we're past, and I guess the nature of the guys is it's not going to change so much. It was interesting to hear Emmanuel Sanders say, for me, being in my third year, only being in the Arian system for 2 years, it's not that big a deal to make a change. Well, you would think for Ben, being a 9-year NFL veteran, just having a much better understanding of the NFL and football in general, it would be an easy change. But, you know, Emmanuel said setting his ways might take him a little longer. And we saw the article that Joe Starkey published in the Trib. So I'll let you expound on that.
Well, first of all, let me get your thought. I'm going to throw this right back at you here. Is this just Ben? I mean, I have learned to kind of accept kind of what Ben does now. You know, does that mean I should? I think one of my commenters on the blog said something I'm encouraging it accepting that it's just Ben being Ben. But, you know, we can bitch till the cows come home, you know, about what the way he handles himself in the media. And to me, it's just Ben being Ben. Do you think that – how big of distraction do you think this is when no one else on the offense is complaining about it, which is not surprising because you got a lot of young kids on the offense there. But, you know, this is just Ben and the Rosetta Stone comments and, we're going to run the ball more because that's what the fans want. You know,
just be the dumbest thing I've heard out of his mouth. I mean, really, that might be the dumbest line he's thrown out there in a couple of years at least.
And I know a lot of people are thinking, well, this is Ben stomping his feet and all like that. And I mean, I guess it is. But I mean, and here's what I think this boils down to. And I sent you this article this morning, and I referenced it yesterday on Trib Live Radio. It's an article back from November 5th, 2007. In Sports Illustrated, and this was right after Ben lost his college coach, Terry Hoppner, to the brain cancer there. And, you know, there's a passage in there that talks about when Bruce Arians basically had pulled Ben aside and said, look, this is your offense going forward. And Ben had a lot of say in that offense starting, you know, as early as you know, that off season there, and was allowed to make changes to the game plan and going forward, you know, from there. Whereas when he was with Ken Whisenhunt, he basically got that thing faxed to him and, late in the week with all the final changes on the game plan, and that's what he had to roll with. So, you know, since that time, Ben has had a lot of say. He's been able to come up, it talks about how he's been able to come up with his own acronyms, calls at the line of scrimmage and the play calls in general and all like that. And this is a guy that since that time has had so much freedom to do what he wants. He's over that time, he's been regarded as one of the top 5-6 quarterbacks in the league, and now all of a sudden all this freedom's gone. Now he's back, he feels the way he did his first couple of years in the league there now, and he feels like all this has been ripped away from him now. So I think this is where a lot of this is coming in from, a defense mechanism with him. He just feels like he's not being respected as a quarterback.
Is that him in the background out here?
No, it's not.
I think that's probably overstating it. Look, Todd Haley's no dummy. We've talked about this. It's not like Ben's not going to be involved in the playbook. It's, you know, Todd Haley is implementing a system and a playbook. They'll work through it. They'll work on things Ben does well. They'll probably discard some of the things Ben doesn't like and doesn't do as well. But, you know, you start with, you know, it's a process of integrating the whole playbook. But then from there, you take what you have and you fit the, you tailor the needs of the players in the system. And certainly with the potential weapons that the Steelers have offensively across the offense, I just think this should be, you know, this should be a new opportunity for Ben, a bit of a candy store in a way. Yeah, maybe it's not as comfortable, but that doesn't mean it's not better. And Bucky Brooks, I think, wrote an article on NFL.com how Haley's going to make the Steeler offense better. We've seen some different views. I know some people who know Todd Haley personally think pretty highly of the guy, think he's a smart guy. And I just think, I think Ben's a little bit petulant here. I think you and I are a little bit tired of talking about it because it seems, just like you said, I think you said it perfectly, it seems like Ben's stomping his feet a little bit, you know, standing in the corner and pouting. And you got to move forward. And I think Joe Starkey wrote about it in the article and said, okay, you know, and I think Ben understands that. I don't want to overplay this, that, you know, he's resisting. I don't think there's any resistance at this point. I just think it's, you know, he's still maybe longing for days gone by. But I think Steeler fans shouldn't be concerned in the sense that I do think Todd Arians is going to bring, say, he's a good football mind. He's been successful in the past. And I think there's a real opportunity for this team to be much better offensively than it was last year. I mean, I don't think a lot of Steeler fans, as you well know, Dave, because it's your favorite line, I mean, blame Arians for everything. But we can look back and realistically say, even though the offense was generally successful, plenty of places with shortcomings, and we can, you know, first and foremost point at the red zone. So, you know, I'm generally optimistic about the change. I like it. I like the fact that Arians has some Western Pennsylvania roots. I like the fact
that Haley.
Haley has some Western Pennsylvania roots. I like that he's been out in other places, that he's had success, that he's also had failure. I think that's important. I like the fact that he wasn't kind of the first candidate on everybody's radar, and he came in and he impressed enough people to get the job, because Mike Tomlin certainly is not a guy who's fearful for his job security. He brought in a guy who he thinks can be successful, and Haley needs to be successful in order to take that step back to the NFL head coaching level if that's something that ultimately he wants to do. So generally, you know, I got a general big thumbs up on this move at this point in time. We'll see how the, you know, see how the structure of the offense goes, but it sounds like you said everybody on the offense who's been interviewed and talked about it is generally excited about it, except Ben, who still has these reservations about learning the playbook.
You know, and that's why I kind of say, you know, it's just Ben being Ben. I don't like it. You know, it's not that I'm saying that it's okay what he's doing. It's just that he's not going to change, you know, what he's doing as far as his comments and all like that. I mean, I agree. I mean, and some of the, hey, let's face it, some of the things that went wrong in the red zone last year, you know, I don't think so much was play calling as much as it was execution. Because if you look at Ben's completion ratio over the years in the red zone, it doesn't stack up to some of these other quarterbacks in the league. In fact, I think I ran the numbers last night, 52.7% career completion ratio inside the red zone there. So, you know, let's face it, you know, Ben's not without blame here why Bruce Arians is not there anymore either. Now, did he have too much say in the offense? Yeah, possibly. I mean, that's been a beef for a long time. In fact, you know, maybe some of the problems was him checking out probably way too much than what he should have. Let's face it, Ben wants to be the guy that throws for 5,000 yards a year, 35 touchdowns and all like that. But I think there, you know, the effort with the exile of Arians, the bringing in of a hard-nosed kind of coach like Todd Haley, I think this is a move to reel him in and tweak him at the same time here. And that's what you're seeing. And this is not the last time we're going to hear these type of comments from Ben. So it's not that I so much, you know, agree with Ben making these comments. It's just, hey, you got to just turn your head the other way when he's making these comments. I know he's the leader of the team and supposed to be setting a better example, but it's just not going to happen. He's not going to automatically stop with these kind of jabs.
Yeah, and hopefully we can just stop talking about it because it's just not that important. So, now let's go into the little bit we saw about the offense. I think it was interesting I think our boy Kabali wrote about the hybrid stuff. You and I talked about it from draft day, from the minute they picked Chris Rainey, about having a guy that you can get into space in situations. Mark did some interesting work about talking about Dexter McCluster's touches last year, which we had talked extensively about, saying that, you know, there were games where he got the ball a lot of times on first down. And that will be the interesting thing to see. And I think what we've been told through the OTAs is we're seeing from Heath Miller lined up in a lot of different positions in the backfield, in the slot, tight in the formation or wide from the formation, and Rainey as well. And you see these guys get in motion. The whole idea, obviously, to get ball guys with the ball in space and get matchups that are favorable to the offensive team. So it looks like that's coming through. It looks like that's going to be a big part of the offense. That's the fun stuff. We didn't see the Steelers throw to their backs hardly at all the past couple of years. They rarely ran screens, and they didn't do it well. They much preferred to run bubble screens to the wide receivers. So, you know, that's a little bit of a change in philosophy. We'll see how David Johnson does as a full-time fullback and whether he's able to keep a spot on the roster. And it does sound like Heath Miller probably going to be utilized a little bit more, and I think that's something Steeler fans have clamored for the past couple of years.
Yeah, and I've mentioned in the past, I don't think you're going to see him nailed to the end of the line of scrimmage as much in the past, and thus the kind of, I think you'll see more of the fullback this year. And David Johnson, by the way, Will Graves from the AP had a little piece on him this past week. He's lost 20 pounds. He's down from 270 to 250 now, and I think Will Johnson, the other fullback in camp right now, the undrafted free agent from a few years ago that caught the Steelers' eye at the West Virginia Pro Day this past offseason, I think he's about 245, 243, right around in there. So, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of movement, and I think Ed Bouchette says in his piece there on his blog that they're lining up the tight ends all over the places in practice, and I pretty much have said that. You know, I think we both have kind of commented that we think we're going to see a lot of move, a lot of Joker-type stuff with the tight end this year in an attempt to cause some misdirection, to cause some people to on defense to declare a little bit earlier and stuff like that, and I think that's what you're going to see. Let's face it, it's all going to come down to the language and the communication and all like that. It's not like Todd Haley's creating new routes, you know?
Right. I mean, maybe we'll have some stuff that wasn't in Bruce Arians' playbook, but he's not reinventing, he's not inventing, as you said, new schemes.
Right. It all comes down to execution. It comes down to what Ben sees and how that matches up with the way his offense is supposed to run. That's why I've said, and I'll keep saying for the remainder of the off season, I really think the first 4 weeks of the season, and heck, we even talked, we even see in that, Batch and a few of these other guys, Sanders and Brown, comment about how much it looks like the offense is going to be predicated on the run to set up the pass. I think you're really going to see this in the first 4 weeks, because let's face it, how much time can you give starters during preseason? I think they'll get a little bit more than normal, but it's not like they're going to be playing complete first halves for all four preseason games. So I think the first 4 weeks of the season, you are going to see a heavily run-first type offense with the idea of kind of moving towards something that you won't be able to say is a run or pass first type offense. But hey, I would expect run first, and that maybe that's what's got Ben so upset right now, is he knows the initial out of the gate type stuff is all predicated on the run.
So let's because I like to do this so we can at least be on record for some of this stuff. Let's hear a couple interesting, I think slightly interesting questions for you. The Steelers, I think, finished the season. Did they finish at about 53-47 on run versus pass this past year?
It seems like they, I don't have those on the top of my head. I wrote about that too, but yeah. That sounds right.
Well, let's sound like we're in the ballpark, and I think every NFL team, I think, finished the season with more pass than run. Maybe there was one team that was really close, but just in general. So if you were going to guess this coming year, I'll refrain from calling it BS. All this BS about they're going to run the ball all the time, and, you know, it's going to be a run-first offense and all that. When we're sitting here, in January 10th or hopefully February 10th and talking about the end of the Steelers season. What do you think the run pass breakdown is going to be?
At the end of next season? I mean, at the end of this upcoming season, I think you're going to see something in the neighborhood of about 48% run, 52% pass.
Which is essentially the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do too. I think all this stuff, you know, this is just
chatter. It's going to be balanced. I mean, heck, every offensive coordinator tells you they want to be balanced, right?
Absolutely. I mean, look, unless you're the New Orleans Saints or, you know, the 49ers back in the day, I mean, there are very few teams who don't want to be able to run the ball effectively. And the whole thing is running the ball effectively. I killed Evan Silva on Twitter yesterday. These guys, you know, the Roto-World guys are having this big conversation talking about how the Roonies have mandated the team run, and they ripped the Roonies for getting involved in trying to, you know, implement or make decisions about how football should be played as owners. And he said, we give them a free pass because of the Roonies, and they've been there for so long. But, and you know, the reality is this conversation was in January. I pulled up the article this morning. January 15th, 2010 is when that kind of that bombshell, if you will, in the terms of Pittsburgh football, article came out where Ed Bouchette wrote how Art Rooney II said the Steelers wanted to run the ball more. The reality is what Art II wanted them to do is run the ball more effectively, and they still want to run the ball more effectively. They went out and got two offensive linemen so they'd pass block better, and so they'd run the ball more effectively. Look, you're trying to upgrade your personnel and do things better. So it's guys just talking a bunch of stuff at this time of the season when there's nothing else to talk about. You got a new offensive coordinator. At the end of the day, Haley's past shows that he is more of a pass-oriented guy, has been all through his career. His track record shows it. He's going to come in, and they're going to run different plays than they ran with Arians, but at the end of the day, they're going to pass the ball most likely a little bit more than they run the ball. Unless they're incredibly efficient in every fourth quarter, they're just pounding the rock and running out the last 10 minutes, which, hey, that'd be fine with all of us. So
yeah, and here's your percentages. Last year, Pat, these are pass percentages for the Steelers. Last year, 57.2. 2010, 52.6. 2009, 57.8, 2008, 54.7, and 2007, 48.9. Now, when you look at the Chiefs, 2011, 52.3 pass. 2010, 47.7. Those were, let's see, when was Haley hired there? 2009?
He became head coach in 9, right.
57% passing in 2009 for Haley. Arizona, what two seasons were those then?
Probably 8 and 7.
8 and 7. 2007 with Haley, 60.4% passing. 2008, 65.9% passing.
And so, you know, look, we can look at personnel. He's got Kurt Warner in Arizona with Bolden and Fitzgerald. He goes to Kansas City. He's got quarterback troubles most of the time there, particularly that year where he ran 40 or he passed 47% of the time. But the answer is game and score are going to dictate a lot of the stuff. And the Steelers are most likely going to come in at, you know, 52 to 57%. Pass plays, and we'll see what happens. And that margin for error is small enough on if somebody's running their statistical regression, they're gonna tell you it's plus or minus 3%, like you hear in all kind of election polls. And, you know, that's the way it's gonna be. So
what do you think it'll be after four games?
Well, it's an interesting four games, isn't it? I mean, I'm trying to remember exactly how they go. They open at Denver. They get the Jets at home. They get week three. I can't remember who they get. And then they get their bye week. So that'll be interesting, having the bye week right up front there and able to kind of tweak things and figure out what they do well and what they don't do well. I think it'll be 50-50. I don't think it'll be dramatically off the 50% mark.
Of course, if they're behind, you know, in any of those games, that's, of course, going to up the passing quite a bit. They go Denver, Jets, Oakland, then a bye, and then Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's a tough schedule. You know, it'll be, they've got Oakland and Denver on the road. They get their West Coast trips out of the way early, right? They go to Oakland, so that's September 23rd, I think.
And are you really going to be testing Revis and the Jets there quite a bit in that secondary of theirs in week two with a new offense?
Yeah, it'll be, you know, it'll be interesting to see. We're guessing. But as I said, I'll be surprised if we're off 50% far off 50% at any point in time.
Yeah, that's just something to look for. I just have a feeling that it'll be more run heavy, especially early in games, trying to set the tone through those first four games. I shouldn't say first 4 weeks because the bye is in week four. I should say first four games.
Okay, so just a couple other things. Ben didn't, you know, we talked about Ben not practicing the last day of each of these OTAs. I find it more amusing than anything. They're like, I know in week one somebody said they gave him a rest, and it's, you know, two tough days of 2-hour OTAs. It's I'm not sure anybody needs a rest, but whatever.
I think we talked about this before we got on live. I think it's just let him take some mental reps. I think it's to allow some other quarterbacks to get their reps in towards the end of the week. It just sounds to me that this is going to be the plan going forward. Who knows how many passes he actually throws? Don't want to hurt that arm this early on and all like that. You know, in OTA. So I'm not reading too much into that.
No, I'm not reading anything to it. I think it's, you know, I think it's more amusing than anything. If they're working on if he's concerned about the playbook that much, you'd think he just want to just take some more reps. But just worth noting.
What about another quarterback that was in town this week?
That's right where I was going to go. Cordell Stewart in town. I guess it was Thursday. Surprise, surprise. Who knew? Cordell Stewart wasn't retired, apparently.
Yeah, I think it was what? Was this Tuesday or Wednesday?
It was Thursday, but maybe it was Wednesday.
Thursday was yesterday. You lost a day somewhere.
I lost a day. So, okay, it was Wednesday because that's when Joe had his long interview with him.
This is a Cordell Stewart, this came kind of out of nowhere.
Absolutely out of nowhere.
And it was Wednesday, by the way. But, yeah, I don't know what he's trying to do. He says closure, David. I don't know. There's something to do, I guess, with his dad and all like that. It just kind of sounds kind of freaky. Why does this guy all of a sudden need to come back and retire at this point in time? Almost makes it seem like he's trying to get his name out there for something. I don't know. I said on Trib Live Radio yesterday, maybe there's some sort of reality series coming for Cordell.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. He did get dropped by ESPN this year. So as we, you know, maybe it's the time of the year when people are resetting their, you know, he sees Hines Ward get a job and they're resetting who they're going to have in different studios. That's as good a guess as any.
It kind of curious. I mean, let's face it, people, there will be praise and people knocking Cordell, and then of course all the other stuff that went along with Cordell. The guy's, you know, biggest fault is he couldn't get past the big game and always seemed to stumble when he get to that point. The original Tim Tebow.
Interesting. I mean, certainly. In the conversation as the ultimate slash player. And I have to say, it always felt like Cordell couldn't read the defense to me, but there was nothing more electric than watching him take off. And I regret the fact a little bit that he wasn't willing to play wide receiver more, because the guy was dynamite with the football in his hands.
Absolutely. How many times can you remember being in a bar screaming slash, you know?
I know you remember this stuff, but you remember that 80-yard run or whatever it was against Baltimore when it's that Michael Vick run that's kind of iconic when he's in overtime against the Vikings, where it looks like two Vikings are easily going to get him at midfield. And he gets past him and through him, you know, but because he said in Cordell that you know, whatever it was, I think it was about 80 yards, that run against the Ravens that won a game, was just crazy memory for me.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was electric. It's just, and I think you put, I don't think the guy could read defenses and all like that. What's funny is immediately during that later on that day, I researched YouTube for some highlights and came across the old DirecTV commercial of him on the beach, almost like in Castaway there. And it shows him trying to, of course the linebacker's going to bite, or of course the mics, I forget how it goes in that, but I kind of got a chuckle out of that. But, you know, whatever, you know, it's not like the Steelers. And here's the thing that surprised me most of all, I think, is by a few reports, they signed him to a one-day contract for him to do this.
I didn't hear that. I always think that stuff's kind of silly, but I could care less. If it makes him feel good and the Steelers are fine with it, have at it.
We'll have to see if indeed about. I know a few media reports stated that. I really have not seen anything really quote unquote official on that. But you know, in the past they haven't done that because of salary cap implications on a few players in the past. I can't remember by name who any of those were, but I just found the whole thing kind of curious. You know, why now?
Yeah. And I think your guess is as good as any, but yeah, you know, it's 7 years later or 7 years since he was with the Steelers or whatever, 10 years since he was with the Steelers and 7 years later. So he got some headlines. The other guy who got some headlines is a headline seeker, Hines Ward. He's got a job for next year and he thought it was going to be on an NFL playing field. I think when the Steelers let him go, and now it's going to be Sunday Night Football talking about what's going on an NFL playing field.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And I would just say, you know, I didn't always think Hines was the best interview, but when I did see him speaking one time this year on whatever it was in a studio situation, I thought he handled himself quite well. So he's obviously a loquacious guy, a well-spoken guy. I think he'd be much better at this than Jerome Bettis. I don't know that he'll make it long-term as a career, but we'll wait and see, and Steeler fans will get full dose of Hines every week now, but it just won't be in the black and gold.
How do you think that he's going to get along with Rodney Harrison? You think they're setting this up to kind of boil something in the pot every week or what?
Well, I think they'll play off it in a lighthearted way. I don't think it'll be anything. You know, I think Rodney Harrison's actually done a surprisingly good job and is established in the role, so bring another guy into the mix.
And, you know, the thing and the way these guys are usually judged, these former players this quickly after their career ends, is how they handle criticism of their own former team and the guys that they played with. So, you know, this is – and let's face it, Sunday night, you know, if he's going to be part of this football Sunday night in America, right off the bat there you have the Steelers and the Broncos, right? So
that'll be I don't think they got many of them, but they do get them right off the bat.
So, you know, we're going to see, you know, how Hines Ward handles criticism of his former team. And a lot of these guys like to make, you know, unless they're a former Patriot, I can't stand all these former Patriots on NFL Network. They just slobber. It's so obvious biased with the Patriots that it's sickening. And I just expect Ward to be more fair and balanced, I guess, if you will, and following the Steelers like I do. I'll be able to know if he's kind of catering to one player or not saying something in a situation on another there. But that's always usually the toughest thing that these former, like I said, that these former players get right out of the chute is how they handle you know, situations with their former teammates.
Yeah, I think the guy who I'm not a huge fan of, to your bias comment, might be Teddy Bruschi on ESPN. I don't think he does a particularly good job. Was there somebody else you had in mind on the NFL Network that you thought was particularly?
Heath Evans is another one, and shoot, they got so many more on there. Who's the other one? I am drawing a blank with him right now. The other Patriot that they're having on there right now on NFL Network, but you know, just don't be biased is all. And here's the thing: Hines is damned if he do, damned if he doesn't. With Steeler Nation, if he rips the Steelers, people are gonna say, "Oh, look at Hines, a traitor here," you know. And if he doesn't, then they're gonna say the other.
Yeah. Well. So good for him. He's got a job. He's got something to keep him busy in the fall. Dave, other things of note that came out this week, anything grab your interest?
Yeah, Dave, the only really other thing that's out there right now is Antonio Brown and his comments yesterday that were quoted by Ed Bouchette. His pending, of course, when we've talked about this, how he and Emmanuel Sanders are going to be restricted free agents after this season and all, and Brown's basically said that his exact words, I think, were, let's see here, whatever the case may be, I plan on being here, and that here is being basically next year's OTA sessions. He also said in the article this morning by Bouchette that you know, he's taking notes on this whole wall situation. He says, it's definitely a learning process for me, being that I could be faced with the same circumstances next year. So I tend to learn from it, take notes. So do you see this as a slap towards Mike Wallace's all? Of course, some people are already trying to put this as a backhanded, you know, statement by Antonio to Wallace, but I don't see that as all at all. I just see it as, hey, this guy right now is saying the right thing, saying he plans on being at OTAs next year. A lot can change between now and the end of the season. Not only can injuries happen, but on top of it, this guy could just totally blow it out of the roof more so than he did last year. But I mean, it's good. I really think if I had to place a bet right now, I don't think Antonio will sit out next year. Of course, he's kind of lowering his bargaining power right now by telling everybody and his brother that, hey, no matter what, I'm going to be here next year. But how do you see it?
Yeah, I think his agent probably said, hey, you know, just downplay this as much as possible. We've now seen virtually every beat writer write a story about this. So it's one of those things, fill some ink on a Friday when there's nothing going on, get a story down. It's not a story. As you said, we don't know how it's going to play out. There's a lot going on, and the answer is going to depend a little bit maybe on how Mike Wallace plays this year as well. If Antonio Brown kills it, Mike Wallace doesn't, maybe the Steelers get that contract done with Antonio Brown next year, certainly well before this date, and it's a non-issue. There's so many variable parts that are coming into play that, again, it's nice that a 23-year-old kid says this, but a lot is left to be written.
Yeah, and I'm not ruling out all, however unlikely it is, before the start of the 2012 season. I think if they were to extend Brown, it would happen after the final cutdown, after they see what their, any extra salaries that they could lop off. I'm not ruling it out completely. I think it's unlikely that they signed Brown long-term before the start of this season. And, what did you think about the Ike Taylor comments on visiting with Mike Wallace out in Vegas this past week?
I think Ike Taylor, man. I think Steeler DBs, Ryan Clark and Ike Taylor, like talking to the media is what I think.
And hey, if there's anybody that knows about dealing with the Steelers, though, come contract time, it is Ike Taylor. So we don't know exactly what was said, but you had to think that Ike saying, and Ike let it be known on Trib Live Radio as well, too, saying, we want Mike in here. If Arians was still the offensive coordinator, it'd be one thing. But with the new offensive coordinator in there, even Ike Taylor's kind of concerned about Mike Wallace missing all this time. That being said, Mike Wallace told Ike Taylor that, he wants that paper. So, meaning he wants to get paid. So
yeah, and I think, that's the first kind of, not that some of the other sources aren't credible, but to me, that's the most credible response, tie directly to Mike Wallace that we've heard so far.
I agree, but I don't know how. And hey, I prop. We don't know if Ike Taylor went out there only to go out there maybe as a messenger to try to talk to Mike Wallace, or if he wanted some R&R in Las Vegas. There were quite a few Steelers out there, so they had a get together of some sorts out there. But I think Ike Taylor was in his ear, but I don't think it did any good on this. I think this is still going. I don't think it. I was asked yesterday if it changed my opinion on anything that we have said up until now, and absolutely not. It changes my opinion none. But I'm with you, though. I think this is kind of the first kind of credible, even though it's secondhand information coming from Mike Taylor, of words that we have had uttered by Mike Wallace.
Yep. Okay, so we get, probably apropos that we end with Mike Wallace watch.
Hey, let's not end with that real quick there. Did you see Ike Taylor, the NFL Top 100 is going on again this year on NFL Network as they scroll.
I misremembered, is that the deal?
No, that wasn't the part. What's funny is Ike is talking about he is the guy that they're talking about when they present Matthew Stafford wherever he ranked at there. And the interview starts off with Ike there. The segment starts off when they're telling him Matthew Stafford had 5,000 last year. And Ike says 5,000, and kind of curious look on his face. And the guy reiterates with the interview, says 5,000 yards. And Ike pauses it again, and he goes, "That's a lot of money." You have to see this. I posted it on my Twitter feed yesterday. It is just, hey, I got to admit, Ike Taylor is probably one of up there in my top five Steelers on the roster just because he is, it's not like he doesn't pretend to be anything other than what he is.
Right.
You know,
right. Well, right.
He's not the
smartest. For better or worse.
Yeah, he's not the smartest. He's not the brightest colored crayon in the box, but boy, he sure is colorful, man, with his words. And if you get a chance, you got to check that out on NFL Network. Like I said, it's in my Twitter feed as well, too. Real quick, David, somebody had a question last week. I know we're short on time here, but we got a question from Brocky Biggert, Staff Sergeant, USAF. And first of all, Brock, we appreciate your service to our country.
Yep, happy Memorial Day. A few days late, but yes, I concur.
He was wondering how soon should a person plan to go to Latrobe for training camp, schedule hotels, et cetera, and being frugal, how much money might you need for parking, autographs, attendance at practices? David, you want to handle that?
Well, you know, I don't have a definitive stuff. I would double-check with the Steeler website. I'll tell you a few things. One is the Steelers, just so you know, and this happens to people every year, and they get very disappointed. The Steelers put out their practice schedule every year. They don't adhere to that perfectly. They will cancel a couple of these practices along the way. So Tomlin will lay it all out. And then occasionally, whether it's weather or more often just wanting to give the guys time off because they practice well or whatever, they're built in. A couple of those practices won't actually happen. So that's just one thing to know. If you're ever going and you're only going to see one practice, it's like going to see a baseball game. If it gets rained out, then you're not going to see anything. The other thing is Latrobe in that area, if you want to stay out there, you know, things aren't overly expensive. Food, accommodation, all of that stuff. You're about 40 minutes outside of downtown Pittsburgh. All of that stuff is, you know, relatively affordable stuff. Virtually all the practices are free. I think they're all free. They may not all be open to the public, but the ones that are free. The autographs, you know, guys walk up and down the hills. That stuff's, of course, free. You know, they're not always easy to sign or accommodating or whatever it may be. But the whole experience is generally cheaper. you know, the Steelers aren't looking to make a lot of money off this thing. St. Vincent's makes a little bit of money, but it is a relatively cheap and good experience. And people who have gone generally have a good time there. You know, bring your sunscreen, your sunblock, and your chairs to sit on the hill or whatever you like, however you like to do it. But it's a good thing, and I'll get some more detailed and more specific information for you after I talk to some of the guys in the Steeler offices.
But now should be the time. As soon as the Steelers release the actual schedule, now should be the time. He should be making those hotel reservations, though.
Yeah, and you know, I think I don't, obviously living close by, it's not something I've done, so I don't have a great answer to that. I don't think this is something where, you know, the area is totally inundated and hotel rooms aren't available. So I don't think that'll be too much of a problem. But yeah, if you want to be up there, you know, your dates in August when you want to be there, certainly making a call to the places in the area would make sense.
And Brock, everybody always talks about the Friday Night Light segment that they have over at Latrobe High School every year. That's kind of under the lights, kind of more live hitting. It's an enjoyable time to hear fans talk about. I would fit that in to find out when the Friday night lights practice is scheduled, and I would make that part of, you know, if possible, part of your experience as well, too, because that's a highly – everybody anticipates that. I think they get, about 10 or 12,000 in there,
yeah,
David?
Yeah, that's toward the end. That is depending on your schedule, yep, that's toward the end of camp, obviously. They spend a lot fewer days in Latrobe than when I was 7 years old and used to go up there with Andy Russell and Marty Schottenheimer and Jack Hamm and those guys. My uncle would take me and my brother, and my dad would go, and you know, people would go into the bar and have a beer afterward with some of the guys and the coaches. So it's a different environment than it was in the mid to late 70s. They've got a lot fewer practices. They've got a lot fewer practices at Latrobe because they break camp earlier and go back to Pittsburgh. So, you know, the schedule's changed, and when it comes out, take a look at it and plan accordingly.
Yeah, and definitely stay in tune with Steelers.com. They do a great job of updating any changes or anything that happened right there. Brock, we appreciate the question. Once again, thanks for your service to our country. One other question before we get out of here, David. Kyle Kitzmiller.
Yes.
Betting terminology.
Another one of our contributors. Thank you, Kyle.
Absolutely, Kyle. We appreciate the comment here. He was wondering slow volume of Steeler news to include in your podcast. Give him a quick betting terminology overview, David. Over under, what it means to lay points, take points.
Yeah, this and is probably, the VIG. So we can probably make this a 10-minute conversation in one of our podcasts next week. But basically, given and taken points. You know, the line set in Vegas. Every week, it comes out Sunday nights right after the 4 o'clock games are over. Almost all the lines are out. If there's injuries or if a team hasn't played yet, like they play Monday night, then they'll hold off on making those lines. But they'll come out and make a line that's generally comes out of a certain group of guys, put this together, five guys that work literally in a back office near the airport, and that gets sent out to the books. They'll change it as they see fit, and betting is taken right then and there for games of that week. And if you're giving points, that means you're the favorite, and you're giving points to the underdog. If you're getting points, you're obviously the underdog, and you're getting points from the favorite. So give and take, that's what we kind of talk. You know, laying points is the same as means giving points, laying points. You put your hand away. These are trading terms that come off the floor of exchanges. They're all the same, kind of the same terminology. When you want to buy or you want to take, you wave something in. So if you're buying and commodities on the trading floors and you want to buy gold or oil or something like that, you wave, you take, and all this lingo has kind of carried over into the gambling community. And Joe Bendel did a really interesting segment on that on Thursday. If you go to 970 ESPN or on Thursday, 970 ESPN, if you go to the podcast, about how New Jersey is trying to legalize gambling, the governor of New Jersey, and the $350 billion that gets bet offshore in the United States or illegally that isn't then able to be taxed. Maybe Dave and I will have a little talk about that and even get Joe on here and pontificate about whether it should be legal and how you go about it. But we'll talk more about that in the over-unders, as we get closer to the season when we do some of these betting, when we do our picks for the weeks.
And we appreciate the question, Kyle. And we also have a guy out in Vegas that kind of comes on the show once or twice a year or has in the past. What was his name, David?
Yeah, that guy in Vegas.
I can't remember his name. We've had him on, I think. We've had him on twice, haven't we?
Yeah.
But we'll get a hold of him again probably before the season starts, and that would make a nice little 20-minute or interview or so. So, Kyle, keep listening. We appreciate the question as well.
All right, well, remember, follow Dave on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow me, at Hammer Speaks. Thanks again for the donations. Kyle was one of the people who has made a donation. Dave and I appreciate all that stuff, kind of overwhelmed by your generosity and support. You can do that on SteelersDepot.com. There's a button there or on PayPal, right?
Yeah, there's a button there on the right. They can, if they feel so inclined to donate. Also, if they log into PayPal and just want to send a payment to admin@SteelersDepot.com, they can do it that way as well.
All right, and fantastic. And keep firing the questions away. We've got time as we hit the lull here after we go through the next OTAs and the mini camp. You can hit us on Twitter at Terrible Podcast or the Gmail account, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.